This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It started with a break-in at Democratic Party headquarters at the Watergate Hotel in 1972 and ended with the resignation of President Richard Nixon in 1974. White House counsel John Dean soon found himself embroiled in the Watergate scandal and eventually testified against Nixon in congressional hearings. Dean will be in Ohio this week speaking to the Ohio State Bar Association about the lessons learned from Watergate and the parallels he sees to the Trump White House. I recently spoke with John Dean, along with WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So what led up to the Watergate scandal? Was this Richard Nixon's efforts to go after leakers in his administration, or what precipitated this?
Well, that's a big question. In fact, I both could and have written a book on that subject, of what led up to it, and it was a big hunk of my testimony. There was an atmosphere in that White House. There was a personality in the president that kind of made it almost inevitable it was going to happen. If it hadn't have been a bungled burglary, it might have been something else as foolish. So I think that there are multiple reasons that occurred.
As all this is unfolding, what is Nixon telling you? What are you telling him?
Well, the White House counsel has a big title. And it's been pretty true of most everybody who's held the job. It's a middle-level staff job. I didn't have access to Nixon. I didn't talk to him until really 8 months into Watergate, when everything is starting to fall apart. And so I didn't tell him anything, really, at the outset. And what's interesting also is that Nixon really, as we know from his tapes, had no advance knowledge of the fact there was going to be a break-in at the Watergate. And what he's really doing when he's covering it up, and no question he was, he's protecting first John Mitchell, then he's protecting Haldeman and Ehrlichman later. So it's a complex scandal. We see and hear echoes today from that era, because cover-ups tend to have parallel kinds of performance.
At one point, he asked you to write pretty much a sort of, here's what happened, correct?
Well, what he did on August 29th, during the middle of his reelection campaign, August 29th of 72, he was out in San Clemente, and he announced that at the end of the press conference, he was being pressed, why didn't he appoint a special prosecutor? Remember, the arrest in the Watergate occurred in June of 72. Now, this is August of 72, and so he's being pressed by the reporters who are at San Clemente, why didn't he appoint a special prosecutor? And he says, well, there's really no need to. He said, we've got the FBI investigating this. We have the General Accounting Office investigating it. There are a couple of committees of Congress that are already looking at it. But most importantly, my White House counsel, John Dean, has investigated this and found that nobody presently employed in this administration had anything to do with it. Well, that was the first I heard of my investigation.
Yeah.
So there was a good bit of pressure after that for me to write something. And I resisted that right to the end, because there was nothing you could write that didn't start unraveling all the problems we had. So there was never a Dean report. There were requests, but there never was one, nor was there ever an investigation by me.
And right up to the point, you know, where you went and basically started talking publicly about this, he was pressuring you to do that.
He was indeed. And it became very clear why he wanted it, because he wanted to say, this was all I was told. In fact, he will ultimately design his defense on the fact that on March 21st of 1973, after I had been dealing with him, he called me in about 8 months into Watergate and started talking to me, because Haldeman and Ehrlichman were busy working on his second term, and just he didn't want it consuming their time. So he started talking to me directly about it, and that's when he also talked about writing a report. But on March 21st, I go in and tell him that I think he knows me well enough at this point. I've had enough dealings. I think he's got confidence to listen to me. And I try to tell him there's a cancer on his presidency, and if he doesn't end the cover-up, it's going to destroy it. I didn't sell it. I mean, I took him through every conceivable horrible I could come up with extemporaneously. The conversation lasted about an hour and 50 minutes. First hour is just Nixon and myself. Haldeman joins the conversation for the last 50 minutes. But at the end of it, he wants me to go give a report to the cabinet and about how everything's fine. Well, it wasn't fine.
What kind of impact has Watergate had on your life?
Well, I had never planned a career in government, but it certainly ended that. I was one who actually thought government service was something you did at the beginning or the end, or the beginning and the end of a career. So I'm not sure it affected my career. I chose not to try to practice law. There were something like 21 lawyers who got on the wrong side of the law during Watergate, and most that wanted their licenses back got them. But I decided to go into business and enjoyed some success there. And then when I turned 60, 18 years ago, I started writing books again. And I wanted to do something when I retired, and that's kept me very busy. I had no idea there would be one New York Times bestseller after another. Actually, I thought I had to make enough money so I could retire and write.
Yeah. Does it surprise you? I mean, there's still that interest, that fascination about that era and what happened to Richard Nixon? Because it is a tragedy. It's one that he brought upon himself. But
it is. It's a travesty and a tragedy. And we wrote the book What Not to Do, and I thought no one would ever repeat it. And that's why it's just eerie, the era we're living in with Mr. Trump. He just doesn't seem to get it. And too many echoes of those days past.
What are some of the echoes?
Well, you have Watergate was clearly and began as an effort to get information to affect the election outcome by going into the Democratic headquarters. The current scandal we're dealing with starts with the Russians going in and hacking the Democratic National Committee. If there was an immediate cover-up at the White House, it's a combination of covering up not only the connection to the re-election committee that had undertaken the break-in, but the fact that the same characters who were at the re-election committee had done some nefarious and illegal activities while I'd worked at the White House. So that was what they were coming up. We have today, if we're not in a cover-up, Mr. Trump is throwing all the wrong signals. It'd be so easy to make this go away, is to get everybody in one room and say, listen, I want anybody and everybody who talked to the Russians, had anything to do with the campaign, I want your full statements given to grand juries or investigators yesterday. We've got to end this. As somebody who's been involved in a cover-up, I can tell you, this has been full cover-up mode from day one. What they're covering up, I don't have a clue. Did they collude? I have no idea. Did they conspire? Did they somehow give the Russians some help, or did they get negative information from Hillary as the one meeting suggested they were going to? Who knows? We don't know those things. But they are certainly not helping to find the answers, and those are the echoes I hear.
Yeah, the president's called this a witch hunt. What do you think of that?
Well, he calls a lot of things by less than accurate names. It's very disappointing. Even at the worst moment, Nixon never called Watergate a witch hunt because he knew it wasn't. And Trump knows this isn't a witch hunt.
Well, Robert Mueller, I mean, if anybody's going to get to the bottom of it, I would think it would be him.
He certainly is a straight shooter. He's not a partisan. He was served under Republican presidents. He served under a Democratic president who kept him on until they could find somebody else to replace him at the FBI. He's gave up a very lucrative law practice for what is clearly not the most pleasant assignment, as did many of the people he's hired. He's got a very talented staff of lawyers, and it's, the fact that we're going through this drill again at this late date after having gone through Watergate is somewhat absurd.
What do you think isn't similar to Watergate? Since we've talked about the similarities.
Similar?
Yeah.
Well, Nixon and Trump have similar type personalities in some regards. They are they're both sort of authoritarian type figures, much more so Trump overtly. He is an extrovert, whereas Nixon was an introvert. But when you get to the dissimilarities, Nixon was much better prepared to become president than Trump. He had been in the House, he'd been in the Senate, he'd been 8 years as vice president. He'd actually been acting president at one point during Eisenhower's illness. Whereas Trump has absolutely no knowledge of government, other than just maybe a rough newspaper understanding, but really doesn't understand the processes. Nixon was a student. He was a grind in both college and law school. Trump does not like to study. He does not want briefing books. He wants maps or pictures and videos and watches television, whereas Nixon went off with these thick briefing books and would study them for days before he held a press conference. They're very different in that regard.
And Nixon obviously had this paranoid streak running through his personality.
Both these men have chips on their shoulders.
Right.
Notwithstanding the fact Nixon was poor and Trump came from money, they just worry about the fact that everybody doesn't like them. Trump is clearly much more narcissistic than Nixon, but they both have that streak, and so there's those comparisons, but there's no question that they're both men who have enemies. You can literally have tapes of Nixon telling Kissinger, the press is the enemy, the press is the enemy, the media is the enemy. Well, you have Trump saying the same thing to the media, striking parallels. And we deal with some of those in these programs we do for lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there are people in the Trump White House who are feeling as much pressure as you did in the Nixon White House? I mean, what do you think the atmosphere is like?
It's amazing. Watergate, people forget, even that lived through it, that Watergate started with the arrests at the Democratic National Committee on June 17th of 1972 during the middle of the presidential campaign. It really doesn't end until officially with the conviction of Haldeman, the chief of staff, Ehrlichman, the top domestic advisor, John Mitchell, the former attorney general, on January 1 of 1975. That's 928 days. And there are events that both precede and follow that kind of fit into the overall picture. So we're talking years. By comparison, Trump's not even six, he's just not even 7 months into office yet.
Right.
So it's very early. I think that it looks like the special counsel has settled in for a fairly extended investigation.
With a grand jury.
Actually, multiple grand juries.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What do you think it would take to blow this whole thing wide open or just have it fizzle out and go away?
Well, it's not likely to fizzle out and go away unless Trump resigned and everybody else went with him. But even that might not end it because some of the financial dealings they're looking at now are just not going to go away until they're resolved one way or the other. people like Paul Manafort and General Michael Flynn have their own serious problems that look like, in taking the high-profile positions they did, they might have put themselves in considerable jeopardy just by being out there, given some of their business dealings. But anyway, the time will tell on that. I don't think anything, it's not, in other words, it's not going to fizzle out. You wouldn't have a special counsel hiring the kind of staff he did. And remember, before he came in, the FBI had already been investigating for about a year. So, you know, they knew there was enough there to make for a serious inquiry. What'll expedite it or bring it along? Cooperation from the White House. If Trump has nothing to hide, he'd be smart to fuel it and make it go faster.
Or could there be someone in that inner circle who basically just stands up and says, no, I'm not taking the fall for this?
It's possible. You know, I would not be surprised with Donald Trump if we have a constitutional crisis. What's that mean? Well, take the parallel of Nixon. Nixon, obviously, his case came down to whose testimony was true, his public testimony or what I had said before the Senate with the tapes being the way to resolve the difference. And so he fought to resist having to turn over the tapes. I'm not sure Donald Trump would turn over the tapes. He might say, I have the army. All right, court, you collect them. Mm-hmm. And that's a constitutional crisis. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, you were talking about the courses that you're offering attorneys, the continuing education class that's called From Nixon's Watergate to Trump's White House, Lessons Learned. What are some of the lessons to be learned from Watergate?
Well, what we do in this, when I was doing my last book called The Nixon Defense, where I started it thinking it was going to be a pretty easy book to write, that I could go in and listen to some of the tapes and understand how Nixon had come up with this wacky defense of saying he never knew anything about a cover-up until I had told him on March 21st when I told him there was a cancer on his presidency, and hung on that. And I just knew that everybody around the White House didn't really believe his conversation or his defense. So I went in and started looking at the tapes, and lo and behold, discovered the only way I could do this book was to transcribe every single Nixon Watergate related conversation. Some had been, maybe a total of 300 or 400 had been roughly transcribed, but I found 1,000 conversations. It took a little over four years with a team of grad students. Had I known going in what I was getting into, I would have never taken the project on. But I ended up with, 4.5 years later, with 4 million words of transcript, and from which I drew the narrative and dialogue of the book, The Nixon Defense. While working on that project, a friend of mine in Cleveland, Jim Robinault, who Thompson Fine Law Firm there, had gone to a continuing legal education program, and we got to talking about it. I said, you know, Jim, I speak at these, but they don't really know what to do with Watergate. And I said, he happens to be a history buff as well as a good trial lawyer. And I said, what would be interesting would be to take the material I'm finding in these tapes, as we're doing the transcripts and letting my transcribers always, I wanted them in front of me, and they were, that took time. That's why it took 4.5 years. Very hard, very laborious work. The Oval Office tapes are not bad. Telephone conversations are excellent. The Executive Office Building EOB tapes are terrible because nobody sat near the microphones that were in the desk. So those are very rough to transcribe. But anyway, I told Jim, I said, we ought to take some of these really interesting tapes I'm getting and look at what would have happened had the rules that the American Bar Association came out with, the ethical standards, post-Watergate, Had those been applicable and have been in existence at the time Watergate was happening, how might that have affected all this? And we really come up with some interesting results. We don't try to take the whole story on. We take pieces of it. And we're in our fourth and fifth iteration now of the program because we did it not knowing what reaction we'd get. We've been doing it for almost 7 years, and that's why we have these different versions of the program. And now with Trump and the echoes I mentioned earlier of Watergate again, suddenly the Watergate, there is a new interest in it, particularly by lawyers who didn't live through it. This program we do is not boring. So we've never had anybody even nod off in one of our programs, let alone their head hit the desk and fall asleep.
So I take it that to summarize this, that the lessons are important, particularly for in-house CEOs who might be dealing with difficult management, difficult CEOs.
That is one of our specialties, because we teach one of the rules that deals with representation of organizations and the parallels between the White House counsel's office and the general counsel of a firm. And this can apply to both inside and outside lawyers. And it's come up again now in the context of Trump. I've been on the phone all morning this morning talking to successors at the White House about the problems that the White House is facing right now, Don McGahn in the counsel's office, and how they've set up a special counsel outside the counsel's office, it appears, and a fellow by the name of Ty Cobb, a memorable thing. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Dean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure. All righty. Bye-bye.
Former Nixon White House counsel John Dean and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson.